Hey guys, welcome back to Crime and Tea, episode number two. If you are joining me for this episode, thanks so much for giving me a chance. I know episode one was a bit difficult to hear, but we have seen the error in our recording and fixed it right up. If you've forgotten, I'm your host, Crystal, and I hope you're as excited to be here as I am. Also here for our second episode is Ron.
Hello.
Today, we will be taking on two shorter cases that are just a little out of the box. People are really extra sometimes, and here are two cases of people really not making the best life decisions. So, without further ado, get your tea, coffee, or something cozy, and let's get into it. So, for our first case, we are going to Germany where we meet Alexandru Nemeth. Fancy name. Don't judge me. Now, I don't have any real background on Alexandru, so we will just get into the case. I had a really hard time trying to find any more information on this case. I had a hard time finding information, period, on this, but I did my best. Now, this all started back in 1996 when Alexandru had a brilliant idea. That brilliant idea was attempting to extort the Nestle company for approximately 25 million marks. He's a genius. How he decided he was going to do this? Well, he decided that poisoning the company's products might do the trick. He poisoned mustard and mayonnaise packaged by the company. He then would distribute tainted chocolates to random people's homes, which is like bananas. Like, what do you do? You open up your door, you're like, what's this
You
chocolate
found this
like?
box of chocolate. Like, that's it. Who wouldn't eat the chocolate that you find on your porch?
Well, apparently
Obviously, a
nobody
secret
did.
admirer.
But yeah, no, not a good idea. He even went as far as to leave cyanide-laced drinks at a playground in the town of Cologne.
They were trying to get the kids to.
He was just out there going for everybody. None of the tampered food items were ever picked back up by him either. He just left them out there. They're just there, and if they're still there, they're still there. Isn't that weird? Isn't that like, I think that's absolutely bizarre.
How long until somebody does pick it up now? Because like, if
Who
you just left
knows?
them
Well,
there,
I
like
mean, I
somebody
imagine they would go
eventually.
bad. Maybe the animals ate them and they died.
Oh man, poor animals.
You don't know. Yeah, that sucks. That really sucks.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So he threatened if they wouldn't comply with his demands that he would continue with his actions. The company proceeded to empty the shelves to prevent any incidents from occurring. This caused the company to lose an egregious amount of money. Thankfully, the efforts of the company kept anything from happening, and there were no deaths associated with other or the other tainted food items.
Do you think it was less than what he was asking for? The
What?
money they lost.
I don't know. They pulled a lot of their stock off the shelves, and they make more than just like, sweets and stuff. Like, they make a lot of like food products and just products in
I
general.
get
So
that
there's
part.
that's a lot. That's a lot to just have to pull off your shelves. Alexander continued on with this for 2 years, till 1998, which I think is like crazy that this went on for 2 years.
Yeah, especially with no like real recorded deaths.
No. And well, that's just the thing, like they don't know. Because they don't know where this stuff went, you know?
True.
So,
How many people and how many people took it to somebody else who took it to somebody? How many homeless
you have no
people picked
idea
it
where that
up?
came from. Yep, you have
Yeah.
no idea. That person, they might just, yeah, they might be that unfortunately dead homeless person
Yeah.
that, thought they had found something and now, are paying the price, which is awful. Alexandra had what he thought to be a super clever idea.
So were they looking into this? Like, did they already report the ransom note
What do you mean?
when they pulled the stuff off their shelves? Like, were police looking into this to
Oh
see what it was?
yeah.
So what was his like retort to all this? He just kept doing it in
Yeah.
silence. He's like, I
Yeah.
sent you the one ransom
Yeah.
note,
Like
and then.
I could not find any further information about any other contact other than this other instance that I'm going to reference, but it just was
That's nuts.
I there was a not a lot of information. I really don't know if that's just because it's a German case, and so there's only so many articles that were actually translated over into English.
Or how much got kept quiet by the police force there?
So his clever idea was involving carrier pigeons. Because yay, carrier pigeons. Who doesn't want to train carrier pigeons for some super flight mission.
Yeah.
So.
pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite the way to do things. On his property near Frankfurt, he had been training. Training for what? He was training his pigeons to courier the loot directly to him. Brilliant. Just this brilliant. When he felt the pigeons were ready for the test, he put some more poison items out, and with it came new instructions for the Nestle company. He instructed them to place 9.2 pounds of uncut diamonds into little satchels he had sewn himself. Don't ask me what 9.22 pounds is. It should be roughly about the amount that we started at with, but I could not for the life of me figure out how to do these conversions for these uncut diamond pounds. Like, I just was having a very hard time with that.
Well, I think the
and marks are not a current conversion for German currency anyways, because they don't use the mark anymore either. So it was really hard to translate everything other than what I was given. I tried really hard. I'm just letting y'all know. This was the previously mentioned, like I said, 25 million marks, which is roughly, that is roughly about $15.7 million. That was as close of a conversion as I could get. Now his plan commenced. He had 12 of his birds ready to go. Their satchels would be attached to their breasts securely. The birds were then left at the location near Dusseldorf in a parked car. Got a little satchel. Yeah. We're ready for flight. Just for safe measure, the car had an untraceable license plate. He thought he was a very clever man. However, we all probably know where this is going by now.
Yeah, these birds let everyone down.
Ruining the climax.
Sorry.
Obviously, he didn't truly think too deeply on his bird brain plan. Yep. I tried. In a shocking turn of events, the police changed the game they'd been playing for 2 years. Instead of the diamonds he had requested of the Nestle company, he got something better. The police put small transmitters right inside those handy satchels. They then proceeded to follow the pigeons discreetly in a helicopter, which I think is really funny to put discreetly in a helicopter next to each other, because helicopters are really loud.
Yeah.
But that's how it was described, so I said discreetly. One of the pigeons finally made it back home after a near 200-mile trip south. That was it when the police had their guy, finally. Not the most well-thought-out plan there, Alexandru. That's it for kooky story number one, coming out of Germany.
That guy was an idiot.
He certainly was.
He thought he was so smart. And his plan was flawed from the moment that he thought about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hot mess.
Honing pigeons. Who would have known that they would lead the police here? Because no one's going to think about following these pigeons to where they're going.
No, not... What? Why would we do such a thing? Who would think to do such a thing? This is a brilliant idea, sir. He was not the smartest guy in the world. I don't even know what his purpose was. He was...
He was trying to get some money.
People bad at doing their jobs. That is what that is. Our next case takes us into New York. So make sure you're still cozy and let's jump in. It all started on a July afternoon in 1932 at Tony Marino's speakeasy in the Bronx.
Good old prohibition.
Yeah, it was the thick of it.
I'd kill somebody.
Great. Just the message we want to be sending out there, Ronald.
There you
are, trying to take my oh, man. So Tony and his buddies, Francis Pasqua. I've been struggling with how to say his name, so I'm going to say Pasqua.
That's you have a hard bad. Time pronouncing English sometimes. I'm not surprised that you can't really do these.
Hey, I do well, okay? I practice. I try.
It's okay. You try. That's all that matters.
And Daniel Kreisberg agreed that they would be able to get away with insurance fraud. After all, Pasqua knew Marino had done such a thing previously to a homeless woman named Maybelle Carson the previous year. He convinced her to take out a $2,000 life insurance policy and name him the sole beneficiary. When very cold, not at this time. One very cold night, he managed to get Maybelle extremely intoxicated. He then proceeded to strip her, doused her sheets and mattress in ice water, and pushed her bed under an open window. Her cause of death was determined to be bronchial pneumonia, and Marino collected the money. No questions asked.
Come in.
Yep. Wipe my hands clean. I didn't have anything to do with you. Pneumonia. So he decided he could do the very same thing to Irish immigrant named Michael Malloy. Not much was known of Malloy other than his Irish descent. He had no family or friends. No one even knew his age, though they guessed him to be around 60. He had no professional trade or steady job. Whenever he was to work, he happily was paid in alcohol. Yay. He figured it would be easy to just get the drunk to drink himself to death with some free booze. Sure. Little did he know how wrong he was. Oh, man, this story was really, like, it was quite funny to like, watch all of these scenarios play out. Malloy was a very regular customer who bought most of his booze on credit. He rarely had money from the occasional odd job he'd picked up. Generally speaking, though, he had all but stopped paying his tab. As business for Marino became hard, he was desperate to try and make some quick cash. Pasqua asked Marino that day, "Why don't you take out insurance on Malloy?" According to another contemporary reporter, he also said, "I can take care of the rest." Marino nodded and motioned to Malloy. "He looks all in. He ain't got much longer to go anyhow. This stuff is getting him." Marino and Pasqua looked over at Daniel Kreisberg. He was a 29-year-old grocer with three children. He later said that he only participated for the sake of his family. He proceeded to nod his head in agreement, and the men forged on with their scheme. Pasqua said he would take care of the job and paid an unknown acquaintance to accompany him to the meetings with insurance agents. His acquaintance called himself Nicholas Mallory, and said he was a florist. One of Pasqua's work colleagues was able to verify this and took about five months and a shady insurance salesman to secure three insurance policies on Malloy. All three policies offered double indemnity, which meant if the individual that was insured were to die accidentally, the policies would be doubled.
Wow.
Yes. So they managed to get these policies through Prudential Life Insurance for two of them and one with Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. Now they were ready to get moving on their plans. Pasqua was able to get a bartender at Marino's named Joseph Murphy to identify Malloy when it was time and state that he was his next of kin and sole beneficiary. If all went well, they would all split the $3,576, roughly about $54,000 today.
That's not life-changing money.
It's just the money, you know? We need a little bit of money to get by. So the press would go all later to call this, or I'm sorry, the press would go on later to call this a murder trust, which also now included a few more of Marino's regulars. That included petty criminal John McNally, Edward Tin Ear Smith, even though his artificial ear was wax.
Okay. I was about to say, how
he doesn't have a tin ear. Yeah, he's got a big ear. Tough Tony Bastone. Gross. Oh, man. And his sidekick, Joseph Maglione. On a December night in 1932, the men all gathered at the speakeasy and commenced with the killing of Michael Malloy. Oh, you just don't even know. Oh, man. On Malloy's stop at the bar, he was delighted to have found that Marino had given him an open-ended tab. Woo! He explained this away, saying that competition from other saloons was causing him to ease on the rules. It started one shot, then another, and another, until Marino's arm had tired from holding the bottle. A witness had stated Malloy had been a hard drinker all his life, and he drank on and on. Yeah, he's been at this a long time. He's in his 60, roughly about, like, you know.
Everybody know that old man.
During the ordeal, Malloy was just as normal as ever, still breathing, good color to his skin, and he promptly ended his night wiping his face with his sleeve, saying thanks, and stating he'd be back soon. He's got nothing better to do.
Not today.
He works. So, within 24 hours, he was back. For 3 days, he continued on with this routine, only pausing when eating a complimentary sardine sandwich. Yum. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, you ate what you ate. Yeah. They were at a loss at this point, day after day, and he was unfazed. On the fourth day, Molay stumbled in, and he exclaimed, "Boy," whilst nodding at Marino. "Ain't I got a thirst?"
This man drank like a camel.
Yes. So at this point, Tough Tony was growing tired of this whole thing. He suggested they simply have him shot in the head. He was done. He was over it. He's like, "Guys, why are y'all fucking around?" Murphy, however, recommended a more subtle approach. They would switch out Malloy's whiskey and gin shot with shots of wood alcohol. Wood alcohol. Yeah.
Like the clean wood?
Yeah, for like wood.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, with just 4% wood alcohol content, it was known to cause blindness. Mm. By 1929, more than 50,000 people nationwide had died from the side effects of impure alcohol. They didn't hold back. They didn't simply mix some wood alcohol into his shots, but simply gave him straight shots of wood alcohol. Straight shots of wood alcohol.
If this man don't die, he's a clean drinker of all time.
So, Marino thought this was a splendid idea, declaring he would give all of his drinks he want. And he let him drink himself to death. Kreisberg also added, "Yeah, feed him wood alcohol, cocktails, and see what happens." Murphy went to the nearby paint store and purchased a few 10-cent cans of wood alcohol and brought them back. Yep, 10-cent cans. I mean, this is back when, you know, 10 cents was a lot, okay? You got to do some stuff.
Why was this not the original play? I spent more money in alcohol trying to get this man.
You have no idea. And they brought the wood alcohol back in a brown paper bag. Do-do-do-do-do. Right. Malloy was then served a few shots to get him feeling good, and then he switched the drinks out. The gang enthusiastically watched as Malloy downed several shots of the wood alcohol, and he kept asking for more. He displayed no out of the ordinary symptoms other than being inebriated. The New York Evening Post reported, "He didn't know that what he was drinking was wood alcohol, and what he didn't know apparently didn't hurt him. He drank all the wood alcohol he was given and came back for more." This guy,
my man,
is the guy.
He is the greatest. There ain't a drinker alive that could probably claim this.
See, I knew you'd like this. This became a routine nightly scene. Malloy drinking shots of wood alcohol as fast as Murphy poured them. Until one night when Malloy fell to the floor without warning. They fell silent, staring at Malloy by their feet. Pasqua checked Malloy for a pulse and lowered his ear to his mouth. Malloy's breathing was labored, and they decided to wait as Malloy's chest sluggishly rose and fell. They assumed this was it. Any minute now, there was a long labored breath. The death rattle.
No, he had a long day that day.
They thought. However, Malloy just began to snore. He awoke sometime later, rubbed his eyes, and exclaimed, "Give me some of that old regular, me lad." Oh, man. You thought I was down and out. You ain't getting me with that. Get out of here. So at this point, their plan was becoming a financial burden between the open tab, the cans of wood alcohol, and the monthly premium on the insurance. It was all costing quite a bit. Marino was becoming distressed, thinking his speakeasy would go bankrupt. Again, Tough Tony advocated for brute force, but Pasqua had another idea. They knew that Malloy had a fondness for seafood, so they thought they'd take advantage of that. They would soak some oysters in denatured alcohol, which is not fit for human consumption. And they would...
What is denatured alcohol?
I didn't look up the whole makeup of it, but it seems to have some sort of ethanol in it and some other, like, chemicals, but I did not look up, like, the whole makeup of it, but it is not fit for human consumption at all.
Yeah, it sounds like gas.
Probably. And they would serve Malloy whilst he was already impaired. Alcohol taken during a meal of oysters, Pasqua stated, will almost invariably cause acute indigestion for the oysters tend to remain preserved. To plan, Malloy ate the oysters one by one. He savored each bite, washing down with wood alcohol. They all watched on as they played cards. To their surprise, Malloy finished the oysters, licked his fingers, and let out a satisfied belch. This man is not going down without a bite.
I read that, like, in the old days, it was a thing to get, like, tapeworms to stay skinny. This man might have had a tapeworm inside of him.
Ew.
Drinking all this alcohol.
No way.
They might have saved him.
No way.
I'm just saying, this man took in a lot of poison.
He's just taking it all in. So now killing Malloy was not only about their pride, but also about the payoff that was now being split between too many conspirators. Next, Murphy tried leaving a tin of sardines rot for a few days, mixed in with some shrapnel, and put it on bread. Malloy was served his sandwich, and they thought surely this would do the trick. Any minute, the metal starch slashing through his organs. Malloy, though, finished his meal and asked for seconds. Asked for seconds on the shrapnel sardine sandwich. Oh, man. I don't even get on that subject. Nope. The gang called together an emergency meeting. They were dumbfounded as to how to proceed. Marino remembered his success with Maybell and thought they ice Malloy down and leave him outside overnight. Pasqua and Marino that evening tossed Malloy into Pasqua's car and drove to Crotona Park. They lugged the unconscious Malloy through the snow and left him on a park bench. They stripped his shirt and dumped bottles of water on his chest and head. Malloy didn't stir, though, through all of this. Marino arrived back at the speakeasy the next day, in which he found Malloy, half frozen in his basement. At some point, Malloy had woken, journeyed back to the speakeasy a half mile away, and managed to persuade Murphy to let him in. When he awoke, he simply complained of a wee chill. Just a little cold. We're all good, though.
Here's some of my nice alcohol. So it was open in, right?
Oh, man. So February was coming closer, and another payment was soon due, so they were getting a bit desperate. John McNally suggested they run Malloy over with a car. Tin Ear Smith wasn't so sure of the idea, but Marino, Pasqua, Murphy, and Krierberg thought they could give it a try.
They wanted to use his car.
John Maglione was able to offer the services of cab driver friend Harry Green. His cut was to be $150. So they all got into Green's cab, drunk Malloy at their feet, and they drove a few blocks before they stopped. Murphy and Bastone dragged Malloy down the road. They held him up crucifix-like, and Green gunned it. Everyone was ready, and all of a sudden, Maglione saw a light out of the corner of his eye. "Stop!" he yelled. The car came to an abrupt stop. Green realized it was just a light turning on in someone's room. Wow. They prepared to go again. Malloy somehow got out of the way, not once, but twice. On the third and final attempt, Green gunned it at 50 miles per hour. Maglione watched on through his fingers. Malloy steadily got closer, and bam, two thuds could be heard. One loud, one soft. Just to make sure they completed their tasks, they backed up over him. Backed up.
I mean, of all people, this is the guy you want to say is dead.
They were sure this was it. Surely he was dead. They were scared off before they could check, though. Now it was Joseph Murphy's task as Nicholas Mallory's, Malloy's brother, to locate Malloy's body and claim the insurance money. However, no matter where he called, no one seemed to have any information on him. And there were no reports in the paper of any fatal accident. Pasqua at this point is getting desperate. He was plotting to just find an anonymous drunk and pass him off as Malloy. The door to the speakeasy opened, and in limped a bandaged Michael Malloy, only looking a little worse for wear.
I mean, he limped in.
He spoke.
He's not made of steel.
He spoke. I sure am dying for a drink. Dying for a drink. He's dying for a drink. He had a story to tell today. He only remembered bits and pieces as he recalled the taste of whiskey, the cold slap of night air, the glare of rushing light, then blackness. He awoke at Fordham Hospital in a warm bed, but he just wanted to go back to the bar. The bar where all these fuckers are trying to kill you.
Rather than
happy to be in the hospital.
They should have just been letting him run up his tab and let him work it up.
So, February 21st, 1933, 7 months after all this had ensued, Michael Malloy was dead. He died in a tenement near 168th Street. A tenement is, like, similar to, like, an apartment, from what I could understand of it. It's just, like, a space that is yours. Less than a mile away from the speakeasy. So they resorted to running a rubber tube from a gaslight fixture to poor Malloy's mouth, and they tightly wrapped a towel around his face. They then got a friend of Pasqua's, Dr. Frank Mazzella, to write up a false death certificate, stating that lobar pneumonia as the cause of death. They received the $800 from the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, and Murphy and Marino spent their share on a new suit. New suits, because we need to do all that for new suits. Pasqua was the one to go collect the money from the two other Prudential Life Insurance Company policies. When the agent asked, "When can I see the body?" Pasqua was caught off guard, stating that he was already buried. To this, an investigation was started. Everyone began to talk, and everyone faced charges in the end. Joseph Murphy, Daniel Kreisberg, Tony Marino, and Frank Pasqua were all tried and convicted of first-degree murder. One of the reports said perhaps the grinning ghost of Mike Malloy was present at the Bronx County Courthouse. All four of the members of the murder trust were sent to Sing Sing, where they all faced the electric chair. They were all killed on the first attempt.
And y'all ain't built like him.
No, they are not. Nobody is built like that man was.
No one.
That is the tale of Iron Mike. Michael Malloy.
That's right. Call him Iron Mike.
Rest in peace, Michael.
I'm surprised he didn't wake up in boat's flames when they tried to put gas in him.
But that is our two tales for the night. And I thought that that one was a cool one that I just happened to come across. And I just researched. Yay. That was my whole day.
I wish medical science it was what it is now, so that way we can know how that man survived so many
attempts. Oh my gosh.
They should exhume his body just to test it for science.
Just to see how he did what he did. But thank you all ever so much for joining us here today. I hope you enjoyed listening to these crazy crimes, and there will be some pics up on the Instagram. You can follow us at Crime and Tea. You can also send us a Gmail at crimeandteapodcast@gmail.com. Please be respectful with all of your messages. If you would feel so inclined to send us a donation, you can do so with the Anchor link or come find us over on Anchor and support us there. Thank you all once again, and we look forward to bringing you more wonderful crime content. Bye-bye!